This is Archer of ArcherRadio.com, and today is Tuesday, June 6th, 2005. That's right, it's 666, believe it or not.
2005?
Did I say 2005?
I think you did.
God damn it. It's 2006. Mark, shut up! Boys and girls, we are back today with Chef Mark of the Remarkable Palate Podcast, and the boyfriend has decided to stick around for another show. Say hi, boyfriend.
Hi, boyfriend.
Hi, boyfriend.
Okay, now we were talking with Mark about on yesterday's show about his trick that he was having and...
Oh, you're going to get me in trouble.
Other various things. We just want to know more details about this trick. You met him on Manhunt.
This was a fellow that I'd known several years ago. We had met then, and we ran into each other online again and decided to say hello and catch up.
And hook up, you mean?
Catch up, an old time.
Now, let me ask you this.
He had moved away. He had moved away from New York for a couple years and then came back. And,
do your tricks come to your house or do you go to their house?
Depends.
Mm-hmm. And when they come to your house, are you already naked when they come to the door?
Oh, no, he's in his assless chaps.
Oh, that's right, his assless chaps. I forgot those from yesterday.
Shut up. No, you know, it's like whatever works, whatever's convenient. Mm-hmm. I happened to go to his place because I went after work, after I was doing a cook day for clients.
Okay. Uh-huh. So and was he naked when he answered the door?
Down in his neighborhood. Nearly so.
Oh. Okay.
Very nearly so, yeah.
You know, when I was...
Yeah, see, now you just want the nasty details.
Of course.
The dirty bits.
Yeah.
Now, who laid on their back?
Oh.
He was yummy.
He laid on his back?
Yeah.
Oh.
You're so...
But here's the thing. So, I just remembered in the back of my head that I remember that Chef Mark is actually a omnisexual person, and he actually has had sex with women, too.
Well, you have, too.
Yeah, but like, he's done it recently.
He actually touched a girl.
He touched a pussy.
Oh, did you really? This was, like, recently?
A couple months ago, right? I've always been an actively omnisexual person.
Oh, well, yeah. Good for you. I wish I could be. I'm just one of those Kenzie folks. You know, you're definitely gay or definitely straight. I'm definitely gay.
He's a Kenzie six.
But Archer has...
So we couldn't repopulate the planet if it was up to you, huh?
No, it would be up to you and Archer to do it.
Yeah, he wouldn't be able to get it up for that.
Well, I mean, hopefully we'd have a girl too, because I don't think Archer and I could manage.
No, I don't know.
No, Archer's pregnant.
Hard as
I was going to say
we couldn't do it.
Archer's having my baby. Didn't you know?
As big as I'm getting, I could be pregnant.
You're like in that Billy Crystal movie.
Yes, we're picking out
remember
names.
Remember that a long time ago where Billy Crystal was able to carry the baby?
Yeah, that was...
What was that called?
I don't know, but that movie didn't make it very well, did it?
Well, if you could get pregnant, honey, we could quit our teaching jobs. That's all I know.
No kidding. All right, really? So changing subjects again because I'm really good at this.
Mark, need to change subject music. We need like a little jingle.
Okay, well, I can insert it in the editing process.
Okay, all right.
But I won't because we're talking
You're
about
You're obsessed
it.
With insertions tonight, aren't you?
He is. He's always horny.
The boyfriend's going to get some insertion later.
Oh, yeah, right.
Maybe he will too. Anyway.
I have a headache.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Well, you won't later.
You know, Archer was laughing at my artwork.
What?
No,
I'm gonna scan this image because we were talking about how artistic the boyfriend is not. So then he sits down and draws this picture.
Insulting!
I swear to God, think about a 6-year-old drawing a picture of a sun.
How dare you?
Was it that turtle that you have to send away to the art school? To see if you have
almost, to it's a cat.
Didn't you see Grandma Moses and her artwork?
It doesn't look anything like this.
Haven't you seen avant-garde art?
Yeah, I believe they call it naive art.
You know, well, all I know is I visited the Dada exhibit at the National Gallery of Art, and I recognized my own creative talents in those pieces.
Oh, is that still going on, the Dada exhibit?
No, I think it stopped
May 27th. But I know that I am Dada.
Dada
is really great. Yeah, like the exquisite corpse that they used to do. That was amazing.
Oh.
That was a lot of stuff.
Well, you see, when you look at my artwork, Mark, you will say to yourself, he is Dada.
He's right. He's Andre Breton brought to life.
Yeah, because it makes no fucking sense. What the
Oh, but see, I don't know. I love that. I was a French literature major in college.
God, this guy's so smart.
French and theater, and we, you know, I studied Dada and Surrealism, and I loved that. I was into that stuff. That was really cool.
Well, you know, when I saw,
and of course, it's, you know, it came out of this really sort of grim period.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the post World War One period, and so, you know, in that context, you can sort of see. I mean, it is a lot about nothing, and it seems sort of senseless. And
right, well, but it makes sense when you're thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, those times when they realized that they had been, when you look at World War One and why it happened and it was so senseless, and the nationalism and the drumbeats to war, and the language used to create all of that, the Dadas realized it's all meaningless. It's become meaningless. And so I remember when we went to the Dada exhibit, I said, you know, I think we need some Dada now. I think we need that reaction now.
Because of Bush and his policies.
Well, it's all become so...
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was very much a thing of its time, and I don't think that it would really have the same impact now, because what happened is we've seen that. Like, we're desensitized to that kind of stuff. I mean, like the absurdism that came out of that, and even before that, like Alfred Jarry, you know, who did the play Ubu Wa in 1896, and was the first play to use the word merde. You know, it was the opening line. You know, and in fact, although it wasn't merde, it was actually merdre, which was sort of like a bastardization even of the cussing.
Right.
And it was just all about, you know, scatological humor, and it seemed like this silliness, but really it was this, you know, giant fuck you in the face of the establishment. And I think we've seen so many movements that have been fuck you movements that in a way it that kind of thing has lost its impact. So
it wouldn't have the same effect today.
Specifically a Dada-esque movement would really not capture it the same way that it did then. But I agree that we need some kind of artistic movement that says that you know, says hello, you know, let's wake up.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. Kind of like fuck the establishment kind of thing. You guys are screwing us over.
Well, but I mean, you consider how media oriented we are. That would only occur if we turn off the TVs, and I mean, it's we're so visually oriented, and instantly we have to have that instant gratification, which is what the reality TV shows provide. It's voyeuristic. It's instant.
Yeah, you know what? I want to actually read you guys something, because I've been connected with this theater company called Upon These Boards. We did a play last year, a reading of an old anti-war play from the 1930s, called Bury the Dead, and it's a fascinating play where the dead of the wars arise and they refuse to lay down, and it's this really sort of jarring piece. And we did it, obviously, in protest to the war, and the sort of theme that they've adopted with Upon These Boards, it's an expression called the new peace is art. And it says, you know, we declare art, war is over. Upon These Boards is proud to launch Peace Wears Well. As theater artisans, we find solace and wisdom within the texts of the literature we perform on stage. Sensing that the future longs for peace and art, we pick up our brushes and pens and scamper forward into the new horizon. And there's these patches that they gave us, which are really cool. You can sort of sew on the patch to your jacket. You know, the new piece is art. We declare art. War is over. I love that. To declare art, you know, instead of declaring war.
I like that too, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, that's sort of in response to what you're talking about. But it's a different kind of movement.
It's not quite Dada, but it's kind of got the same feel to it.
Yeah.
Well, let's change topics. What do you think?
Before we move on, you might want to have a peek at the Rolling Stone article coming up about Kennedy. Robert Kennedy Jr. wrote this article about... Okay. Actually, you read the headline.
I have this. It's a dated May 1st, 2006. Republicans prevented more than 350,000 voters in Ohio from casting ballots or having their votes counted, enough to put John Kerry in the White House. It's written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It appears in the Rolling Stone magazine, May 1st, 2006. Have you seen that?
I haven't, no.
Well, definitely read it, because Archer and I were actually clued into this by a friend of ours who knows an ABC reporter who actually covered the 2004
election
frauds.
Okay.
And ABC News would not touch her story.
Oh, man.
It was too...
I actually was a little bit separated from a lot of that because I had sent in my absentee ballot. I was in Italy during the election. And it was really disheartening. I mean, it was... But it was interesting. The moment when all that was going on, I was literally... I was in Florence sitting at the Accademia gazing up at the David. And the interesting story about that was that, you know, during the time it was made, the David was a symbol of, you know, the rise against the power of the Medici family.
Right, absolutely.
And I thought, that's what we need. We need something like that because the power of this Bush dynasty is just like they can do whatever that, you know, they feel like they can do whatever they want. And we let them get away with that. And it's us. I mean, we have to take responsibility.
It's the common denominator.
We let it happen. You know, you can blame Bush all you want, but we have to say we let it happen.
Well, it's the American people. How much are we willing to stand? But this article is very revealing, and it's worth the read, and I've been passing it out to every teacher in the department and everyone I know. I've been forwarding the article, so definitely have a
forward that to me, and I'll read that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
Now, where did you want
to... I wanted to talk briefly about something I heard on your show the other day, Archer, was this ruling about...
The Supreme Court ruling.
Yeah, the Supreme Court ruling about your role, whether as a private citizen or as an employee, and I was really bothered by that. You know,
would you happen to find that article online at all?
I didn't. No.
Was this about the whistleblowers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That it's. I feel like I liked the dissenting opinion that was written by
Justice Stevens, I think.
No, it was not Stevens. It was the other. I think I'm not sure, but it was
no, not the dissenting was not by Kennedy. It was by
Souter. Was it Souter?
Souter
have an opinion that
you're
voted?
Right. You're right.
And what he said is that yes, it's true that it is important that the government agencies be able to sort of rein in their people and control sort of what information gets out there. But however, there are times when justice must prevail, and in the interest of justice, it is sometimes important. I mean, that's one of the founding principles of our country,
exactly. Which
says, look, in the interest of true justice, it is sometimes important to have, you know, either civil disobedience or to just defy orders. You know, this whole blind adherence to orders is one of those steps down the slippery slope. That it says that, you know, it's the press secretary saying that it's unpatriotic to question the president. It's that kind of stuff. It's like, no, it is actually the definition of patriotism to question the president.
And yeah, it's someone's
duty as a public servant to do what is right for the people, not for their bosses.
Right, I understand that. But they're saying in your position, in your contracted whatever position, you cannot do that. Because
right, and I feel that to say that is actually unconstitutional and against the founding principles of who we are.
But we have to realize
if the establishment is setting out to keep quiet the truth, then it is our duty to say what the truth is.
We have to realize that Bush appointed Roberts and Alito because they supported a strong executive branch.
I also support a strong executive branch in principle, but not a bullyish executive branch.
Which is what this is.
That bullies everyone. Yeah, and people that just do it whatever the hell they want.
Well, you know, what's really hypocritical is that the Republican Party claims to be the party of strict interpretations of the Constitution. Well, the Constitution explicitly detailed three branches of government with equal powers.
Yeah,
I mean, they want to strictly...
Separation of powers is very important.
Yeah, and so here we have a complete abrogation of the Constitution and its literal word, and which this seems to be fine with the far right. You just wonder, do you cherry-pick when you literally interpret the Constitution, like when two men can't get married, but when the president wants to eavesdrop on my phone call? I mean... What part of that are you interpreting? So it's very hypocritical, and I think
there is precedent with the court saying that you can't, you know, if you enforce a law sometimes and then not other times, then in essence, you know, that I don't know the legal expression for it, but essentially, like, you know, the law isn't really valid if you're only going to enforce it sometimes and not others.
It depends on when it benefits the executive branch, which is absolute monarchy or dictatorship, and that's not how this country was founded. But I said today in the faculty room, it's, you know, in an odd and peculiar way, it's fortunate that George Bush won a second term, because his legacy is tarnished. He has already been reviewed as one of the worst presidents in the United States. His blowhard, horn-blowing nonsense.
Jingoism, yeah.
Has been completely destroyed. He is now regarded as one of the most incompetent administrations. The Republicans, Tom DeLay, ready to serve jail time. I mean, the legacy, the GOP agenda, it's all smeared, tarnished. I mean, if he had lost in November, George Bush's legacy would have been the savior for 9/11. John Kerry would have been left with a Department of Homeland Security that could not deal with Katrina, and that would have been blamed on him.
But either way, it doesn't really – it's like – you know, okay, so, oh, yeah, now we get to say we were right, you know, and everyone agrees with us now. I mean, it doesn't matter whether they people agree with you or not. It's just, you know, I don't think that you're saying that, but it just, that's sort of annoying to say, oh, well, yeah, now that he's had the second term and now that people are disenchanted with him, ha, look, we were right. Who cares if you were right?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the Bush...
They don't up our country, you know.
The Americans voted for George Bush, and we got what we voted for.
Right? We deserve.
I think he is exposed, and not history. Current history is already judging him to be the worst, and so now we have to decide: do we want as a nation? Do we want to move forward and deal with real 21st century issues, or do we want to try to pretend it's still 1955?
Well, here, you know, Archer knows my view on this. I don't really think that the Democratic Party is any great hope for that, because
I agree.
The problem is the parties. That's the problem. The problem isn't the Republicans, and the problem isn't those liberal Democrats. The problem is the parties. The problem is that we have a two-party system.
Oh, I agree with you.
That have all the power, and
absolutely,
that reasonable voices cannot be heard.
Absolutely.
As much as they hate each other, they hate the independents even more.
Absolutely.
They don't want any reasonable voice to be heard, and they do everything they can to squelch that.
Absolutely.
They're terrified. I mean, you know, they spend all of their time and energy accusing any third-party candidate of, quote-unquote, stealing votes.
Excuse me,
those votes don't belong to anyone but the people who cast them, okay? So to say that Ralph Nader or you know, Harry Brown, rest in peace, or any of these, you
or
know,
even Ross Perot
fringe
back
party candidates are stealing votes is a misunderstanding of what it means to be an American.
Well, we were only a two-party system until after World War I. We didn't become really an entrenched two-party system. In the 19th century, there were several parties in the United States, and
there was still always a strong push and pull of, like, generally two major parties,
right,
you know, two major forces that were pushing and pulling like that. And you know, these other parties just have a hard time getting taken seriously, you know?
Well, and they tend to be more regional. I mean, you know, the know-nothings,
right,
or the so, but, you know, you voted your issue. So if you were a slave owner and slavery was your issue, then you voted for that particular party,
right,
which is
isn't it interesting you say that they're very regional? Because, you know, look at the rise of the two major parties and the rise in the huge rise in federalism. I mean, you know, basically our country is no longer a federation of states. It is a one nation where the federal government has so much power, you know.
Yeah.
That can be disturbing. You know, that's very disturbing to me in a lot of respects, because, you know, here we are, we're supposed to be a collection of states that really can choose to govern themselves, but the governors are really, the governors really have no power anymore.
They only have power over their own states, and even that's useless.
But this is what I'm saying. Even within their states, they don't have much power, because the federal government at any time can step in and overrule them. And, you know, I really believe that municipalities and states should be able to govern themselves. They should be able to make their choices and say, well, this is what we want here in this state.
Yeah. Well, but it's really become...
But, I mean, but at the same time, you know, I think there are basic protections that the Constitution should govern, and then beyond that, yeah, let the states and individual cities choose what they want.
But it's become power of the purse. I mean, the federal government controls power of the purse. And so when someone like Bush comes along and say, well, we're not going to give you money, we're going to mandate education curricula and programs, but we're not going to give you the money to do it, then what do the states do about that? So we're dealing with that with Maryland and Virginia, for example. We're mandated to give all this testing, and we have to jump through these hoops and barrels so we don't get on this federal hit list.
Yeah, right.
But there's no money. The federal government's not giving any money, and so the states have to make up that difference for what they're getting from the government that's passed along to local governments. So there's like this dependency that has occurred along the way, and it really is tied to power of the purse. So
what's the common denominator of all of that? I mean, the most common word you said in that sentence was government, government, government. You know, mm-hmm. state, federal, this. There's so much government that I think that's so much a part of the problem.
Yeah, the bureaucracy is huge. Well, listen, I need to cut you two off because I want to bring this back to a different topic.
Okay.
As the moderator and the host of this show.
Is that what you are?
Exactly. Remember?
Who are you?
Let's think of the name of this show. Archer Radio.
Archer Radio.
I get to decide things. And I want to talk just briefly. Shut up.
Archer Radio.
Who do I sound like? Madge.
Honey.
Listen, Mark, I want to talk to you about this new podcast that you're going to do.
Yeah.
When is it going to happen?
I think in the next week or so. I'm trying to sort of get my little ducks in a row and get all stuff ready. And he's going to be one of the guests on the podcast. Do you hear him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shut him up.
I'm going to go to the dog. Adorable.
What's his name? Chauncey?
His name is Stiva.
I'm kidding.
Stiva. And he's named after the brother of Anna Karenina.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. His full AKC name is Stiva Arkadievich Oblonsky.
Oh. Okay, now, have you thought of a title for your new podcast?
I like what you said. I think Remarkably Mark.
Remarkably Mark.
For the new podcast, yeah.
Okay.
I'll just talk about whatever, you know. I'll have guests on, and I'll talk about whatever comes to mind. I'll talk about my life, as opposed to my professional life.
Will we hear
life.
About your sex life?
Maybe, a little
Ooh.
Bit.
Ooh. And not too boyfriend, much. He has said that he wants me to be a guest on his show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Because we'll Mark's like a regular on our show now.
Right.
I think people are going to start to get sick of me. I don't know. They're
you think
like,
so?
Oh, I heard that fucking chef again.
I was going to say, actually, if you think about it, we've had Friday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Oh, boy.
That's okay. Yeah. I think you have great conversations and good things
okay,
to talk
well,
about.
Well, thank you. Wait, before we change.
I want to finish just one thing. I want to talk.
You stop.
What kind of things will you
He's
discuss?
He's going to get a spanky poo.
Ow. Shut. Stop it.
He deserved it. I wanted to ask.
That hurt my ears.
Here's a cooking question. I was making a demi-glace sauce, and it was having a hard time turning brown. How brown should a demi-glace be?
Probably the color of shit.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that is horrible.
Yeah. First things, it should be called demi-glace, by the way.
Demi-glace. All right.
Yeah. And The key is to get good color developed on your bones or your meat that you're roasting before you create the stock. So develop the color early on when you like. Let's say you're going to roast the bones.
Right.
So get a lot of color there. It should be a good. Is it veal demi-glace or beef or chicken
beef.
Or
beef?
Okay, a beef demi-glace should be a really nice dark caramel brown color.
Okay.
You know, okay. Here's a good comparison. Have you ever soaked dried wild mushrooms?
Yes.
And then you soak them. The liquid that comes out of that's the color that your demi-glace should be.
Because like I have
a nice, medium dark brown.
I made my demi-glace and it wasn't turning the color that I wanted, so I ended up using Kitchen Bouquet.
Well, what's that?
You know, some of the commercial stuff is pretty good, actually.
Well, it just turned it. My grandmother said it was the Cajun chef's secret.
Oh. Yeah.
For roux that wouldn't turn brown,
you use
honey. Just use some Kitchen Bouquet.
Is that that's a name brand?
But it's a little bit. It can make it a little bit salty if you're not careful.
Yeah, you have to be very careful with it. But it was her secret.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what was the demi-glace for?
It was for. I made a. Would you stop? I had a dinner party and I had Was it my lamb chops?
Was I there?
Oh, it was for my lamb chops. Yes, you were there. Yes, it was my lamb chops. Yes. So and I made... The demi-glace was the base. Demi-glace was the base for this. Like, I made rack of lamb. It was stuffed with crawfish.
Yes, I remember that now.
All that. Ooh, yes, that and good. Art. Well, I spent all afternoon. This demi-glace was giving me all kinds of headaches, because I knew I'd done something wrong, but I needed to fix it.
He was and feisty in the kitchen.
I was very feisty, and then so I put
that
this.
Very New Orleans.
Yeah.
And can so, I do my Justin Wilson for a second? Ooh, yeah. That'd be wondrous, I guarantee.
And he's not even from Louisiana, he's from Florida. We don't claim him. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, he calls himself the Cajun cook.
Yeah. He's not a Cajun.
All right, go on. Oh, dear.
Well, Archer broke. I put it in a bowl
was
with
that
a
what
glass
that stuff
cover.
Was?
Yes.
It
you
was
broke
white.
It.
That
the
stuff
demi-glace?
Was white.
No, it looked that like that was my bechamel sauce.
Yeah,
it doesn't
and
matter. You broke it.
I broke a dish.
He ruined it.
You know why I broke a dish?
All that time
because the boyfriend didn't put the wine stopper tightly into the bottle of wine. When I went to grab the wine bottle, the stopper fell off, rolled behind the refrigerator.
I can't wait to hear you guys in 10 years.
He did that because he didn't want that bechamel sauce on his anywhere near his food. So he decided, I'm just going to break the whole container.
But a bechamel is the base of so many sauces. It's what they call a mother sauce.
I know he was going to use it all week, but I ruined it by breaking the dish into
it. He destroyed it.
Oh, Lord.
All right. I'm going to bring this back. Let's come back. Right, come back to center with
back
Archer.
To center.
With Archer. Okay.
Archer Radio.
We need to bring this to an end because this is the second show. And Mark, I hate to tell you, but we're not having you on the third day.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. I got to go walk the dog. He's ready to piss.
Okay. But listen, I am telling you, I am so looking forward to your personal show, whatever you're going to
call
it.
Okay, cool. Well,
Remarkably
good.
Mark.
Excellent.
And, of course, you know, I will promote the hell out of it whenever it comes out, okay?
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. Okay. So that's going to light a fire under my ass to get moving.
Exactly.
I've got a little bit of audio that I've already recorded and I'm ready. So I want to have, you know, several shows worth of stuff in the can before I start it. You know, that's what I did when I started my Remarkable Palate podcast, and it served me in good stead, you know.
Well,
so
how often do you think you'll post?
Oh, I don't know, probably once a week, maybe twice a week, but I'll just be more free with it. I'll do it whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, I am so looking forward to it.
Good. Okay. Well, nice talking to y'all.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it so much.
Have a good one.
Okay,
you too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Mr. Boyfriend, do you have anything else you want to say?
Archer does not like my artwork.
Okay, I swear to you, I am going to scan this and put this image on the website for people to
and
see.
And I think your listeners and viewers will look at that and think, oh my God, where has this talent been hidden? Why has it been hidden?
I think they're going to look at this and say, oh my God, what six-year-old drew this?
You can be as abusive and insulting as you want.
Sweetheart.
I know. I am talented.
I am sure of it, but it's not the artistic talent.
Grandma Moses?
We got into this discussion because when I win the lottery and make lots of money, the boyfriend said he was going to choose the labels to go on the wine bottles. And I said, absolutely not. You don't have a bone in your body that's artistic. I will do all the artistic nature of it.
And I was completely insulted. And I quickly produced a piece of art
that would gladly adorn
any bottle of wine.
Boys and girls, I want you to go to the website and check out this boyfriend's artwork, and you be the judge. Should it be on a bottle of wine? Or should it be in the trash?
Overwhelmingly, it should be displayed on the walls of the National Gallery of Art.
Do you hear his voice? He's laughing so hard at himself that he can't control it.
I am not.
All right, we need to wrap this up. So, boyfriend, say goodbye.
Bye.
Until next time, boys and girls. Bye.
Archer Radio.